Om Sahana Bhavatu, Sahana Punaktu, Saha Viryam Karavavahai, Tejasvi Napatitamastu Mavit Vishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Ajnanam mabhatistadvata, ajnanam mabhatistadvata, vipekshas cha parokshadihi, vipekshas cha viparokshadihi, aparokshamatishoka, mokshas trittir nirankusha. Mokshastri-tirinirankusha. Remember, first the tenth man story was told, and all of these, what we call avastha stages, right, or states of experience, were told in reference to the tenth man story. Then those states of experience were told in reference to the Atma, in reference to self-ignorance. And so now he's going to talk again about these avastas, these states of experience. And so he lists them. So now this is in terms of the bondage and liberation that you experience as a jiva. Right? I feel bound, I need to be liberated. What are the ingredients? What are the stages that a person that are involved in that going from bondage to liberation, okay, for an individual? So first one, I'll do the Sunday first, okay? Ajnanam avrittihi tadvat. I have a typo in my thing here. Vikshepa. I have vipeksha paper, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so vikshepaha cha parokshadihi aparoksha matihi shoka mokshaha triptihi nirankusha. Okay. So he's listing. We've had this list about the third time now that we've had this list. Ajnanam, the word ajnanam means ignorance. Avritti, the avritti and the vikshepa, these two things are the result of ignorance. The ignorance is just the simple not knowing. The avritti, then, is the covering that not knowing causes. So, for instance, in reference to self-knowledge, I don't even know or even think about there being a limitless self. That's how deep the ajnana is. I don't think, oh, there's a limitless self I don't know about. I don't think anything. So it's like an indifferent ajnana, we'll see. Almost an indifferent ignorance. It's that not even come into the question. I don't even know that I don't know. That's the level of ajnana. The avritti, the next one, the avritti is the covering that ignorance causes. Like if I were to think, is there some sort of a limitless self, or is there some sort of a self that lasts beyond this life? You could say, I don't experience any such self. There is no such experience there available to me. I don't see any such self that survives death or that is limitless. I only see things that are limited and changing. Right? That's the avritti. Right? That self is now hidden because of the ajnanam. The existence, the being of that self which is limitless is unknown to me. It's hidden from me. The vikshepa, the third one, is what that covering causes. Because if I am, but I don't know who I am, then I can mistake myself to be something else. Right? So the vikshepa then is, I am a karaka, I am a bhokta, I am a doer, I am an enjoyer, I am a limited person, separate from you and separate from you. That's the projection that requires the ajnanam and the avaranam. Even in, that requires the ignorance and that as though covering. Even in psychology, the whole psychology, at least in depth psychology, is based on this avarana vikshepa. Your complexes that are inside, you're unaware of where the pain is really located, right? Or what has caused it, it's there in the unconscious. And so what happens then, it's because you're in pain, you're feeling that emotion, you're feeling the pain that's caused by a complex or things that happened in the past or triggered. So you're feeling the pain, but you don't know why you're feeling the pain or what the source of the pain is. And so because you feel the pain, you experience the pain, but you don't know what the source of the pain is, you're a sitting duck for projection. Right? Because then that pain gets projected out onto your situation. Right? It's the same for, say, if a person is, like I had this happen to me in India when I had a vitamin B deficiency and I felt really depressed. And I thought, you know, I'm feeling depressed, so I looked around to see why I'm depressed. What is the problem? There's some problem out here that is making me depressed. Actually, there was no problem at all. But depression means there's a problem. And so you have to then match up the problem with the situation. That's what we mean by projection, you know. And so say if I'm feeling hurt, the hurt may have nothing to do with you. But if I'm not aware of my own unconscious or my own inner psyche, that hurt then gets projected onto somebody else, right? Or the anger, or the depression or dejection. For me, that depression was because I needed a vitamin B shot. When I got the vitamin B shot, within 15 minutes it was gone. And so then I looked around and said, what was that about? Right? But when it was there, then I was trying to find out some reason that I was feeling so sad. Because if you're sad, you should have a reason for it. So then you have to make up a reason. Something will come. Right? We use the example. So in fact, in that dissertation that I wrote a long time ago, I wrote when I was talking about Jung and Vedanta. I wrote on this avarana vikshepa in terms of psychology. And what is the cure for it in psychology? Knowledge. That's the cure for it, is getting back into what the source of the problem really is. Then the projection stops. Until you become aware of what is actually the cause, what is actually there, the projection continues. So it's the same. We use in Vedanta, we use the rope snake. Right? You experience the bends of the rope, but you don't experience the ropeness of that thing. And when that's so, you have the experience without knowing what it is, you project something on it. That's how it works. We project all of the time. Swamiji goes on and on. He uses rope snake all the time, so you have to have rope snake. Vedanta and rope snake, good again. But he will go on and on about a lot of different things, like one that he likes to use is the raised eyebrow. You know, some person looks at you and they raise their eyebrow. You know, what are you going to do with that? Most people would do nothing with it. But what if you were very sensitive, you know? Somebody looks at you that you are care about in one way or another, they look at you and they kind of squint or raise their eyebrow. Right? And the way they squint and raise their eyebrow is how your father used to squint and raise his eyebrow when he was really angry, or something like that. So what does it mean? That's what gets... Right? So this avarana vikshepa, you know, is something that we're suffering from all the time, just in daily life. But now you have to take this avarana vikshepa all the way back to the problem of your very being, the problem of self-knowledge. We have this whole problem. We don't know who we are, but you're here. The person is here. I am here. Right? I am here experientially. I can say I'm a conscious being, so the experience is here. But I'm so ignorant. I'm ignorant of my ignorance. The experience is here. My body is here. My sense organs are here. These thoughts are here. These emotions here. This complex person is here. And that's who I am. That's the end of it. That's who I am. That's the ajnanam. That's how deep the ajnanam is. Until somebody starts to make you see, to point out. But until somebody comes and points out to you, this avritti, this avarana and vikshepa is taking place because of that ignorance. Not knowing who I am, I then just assume what is right in front of me. This body is conscious, therefore I'm the body. Mind is conscious, therefore I'm the mind. Yeah, the mind with the sense organs, with my thoughts. I'm my mind with this body. That's who I am, that's me. And you're your mind with your body. That's who you are. Right? Because I enjoy consciousness, I'm a conscious being, therefore. Right? And so the avarana vikshepa is something that's a natural result of ajnanam. We say, in fact, vidyaranya works with this a little bit differently, but we'll say, in fact, that ajnanam, ignorance, has, in general, but now ignorance in reference to yourself is what we're talking about, it has two powers. It has two capacities. The one capacity is to cover, and the second is to project. So avarana vikshepa are two capacities of ajnanam, right? Of ignorance. And so here we say the ajnanam avritti. Avritti is another word for avaranam. Tadvat means like that. So we've got the ajnanam, the ignorance, the avritti, that which covers, the ignorance that now covers. And then the vikshepa. These three in the projection. It is these three of these seven stages that he's listing, these three that are responsible for bondage. The ajnanam, with its twofold capacity of avarana and vikshepa, that is what binds you. Ignorance, in fact, you can even simplify it, what binds you is ignorance, self-ignorance. Because, in fact, your being is not bound at all. But the ignorance that causes the avarana vikshepa. Of course, if you didn't have the problem of identifying with this body, there'd be no problem at all. If you didn't identify with the mind, but you do. That's the vikshepa. Since that identification is there, you have bondage. So those three are bondage, as we'll see, it gets more into this. But then, okay, those three, ajnana, avarana, vikshepa, then paroksha dihi. The paroksha dihi is the fourth one, indirect knowledge. The indirect knowledge is just like when the teacher comes along or you have heard from somebody that, you know, there is a self. The Vedas talk about a self that is limitless. They say, what if I say to you, hey, I just heard from in India, I was just hearing this, that there is a self. All the Upanishads say this, that there is a self, that your self is actually limitless. That yourself is the limitless being, which is the truth of the whole universe. That there, in fact, is only one self. That this is the message of the Upanishads. This is what the Upanishads say. So now I'm delivering you this information, this message. I'm bringing you the news. Right? That's how Vidyaranya talks about it. Like somebody bringing you the news. The Upanishads say that there is one limitless self that you are. That's indirect knowledge, because then you'll say, really? How could that be? I would like to know about that. Right? So that indirect knowledge makes you know about something. Like if I were to describe China, you might say, oh, I would like to go there and see it. Because the description sounds so interesting. You know? Or even if you're studying biology or you're studying chemistry and they're talking about all of these molecular structures. They're just talking about it and they'd show little drawings and you believe it and you understand it, but you haven't seen it yourself. That's indirect knowledge. So this is indirect knowledge of when we call paroksha jnanam or paroksha dihi. That's indirect knowledge. Somebody's telling you about the self and it interests you, but you don't know what they're talking about. If I say to you, you are limitless, you would say, oh really? Isn't that nice? That's good. I hope that's true. But you don't know it. Right? It's like in the tenth man story when the old man comes and says, that there is the tenth man, I'll show him to you. Good. Thank goodness. Showing. Right? So not direct. So that paroksha jnanam. Then aparoksha matihi. Aparoksha matihi is the fifth one. Aparoksha matihi is the direct, immediate knowledge where your given that teaching to make you, that teaching works in a sense like a sense organ. You know what I mean by that? Your sense organs give you direct, immediate knowledge of anything out here. My eyes give me direct, immediate knowledge of color. My ears give me direct, immediate knowledge of sound. But what's going to give me direct, immediate knowledge of myself? Right? The problem is that I am here as a conscious being, but I don't know what this conscious being that I am is. So I already have the self-experience, but I don't have any idea what this me is. That's the ajnanam. Because I don't know what this me is, I take it to be this body, mind, sense organs. Because my sense of consciousness, my personal sense of consciousness stops at the skin. Right? So this is conscious, this isn't. And so why would I say, I would have to be really psychotic to say, I am this, you know, and I'm also the chair. Because the sense of me doesn't extend to the chair, right? But if I'm a Vedantin, I would say that. I am this, and I am this, and I am this, and I am this, and I am the whole. Right? You would say that. But you wouldn't say that out in public. Because you say it out in public, nobody's going to have a clue what you're talking about. Right? So to actually recognize that the conscious being that I am, that in fact, and this is something for your direct, immediate appreciation, that there is nothing in your perception away from your being, away from consciousness. This body, so just look at your experience. So it's important to understand this. Your body is in your consciousness, right? Through your sense organs. That's why this body is in your consciousness. If you didn't have a sense of touch, you wouldn't feel your physical body. You know, you had a spinal injury or whatever. Close your eyes and you would only feel up to where the break was. That's all. Otherwise, no perception of the body. If I close my eyes, I not only don't see this, I don't see my body. If I lose my hearing, I hear you. I don't hear you, but I also don't hear this. Right? If I lose my sense of smell, I lose it for everything, including my body. So this body, as much as that picture or that rug, or this space, is known to me through my sense perception. You take the sense organs away one by one, and you're taking away your perception of the world, which includes this body, right? But now, so if you understand that this body is an object here in the world, and every part of your perception, just this room is enough, there is no part of your perception that is away from awareness. The whole perception is equally in consciousness. You could say, that wall is 10 feet from this body, but it's not 10 feet from my consciousness. And that's experiential. That's an experiential fact. But the identification with the body is so much, you know, that we only think in terms of my being here and you being there. We don't think in terms of the whole of the experience is known to me equally. Equally rests in my being, equally rests in my being, which is consciousness. We don't think like that. And the same goes with the mind also. The mind, every thought is totally pervaded by consciousness, by your being. The thoughts come and go, your being remains the steady, silent, beautiful self that you are is totally present to every thought, but that differentiation hasn't been made. Mm. You know, the aparoksha jnanam means that differentiation has been made, so that then you can say, oh, I am limitless. I am, my being is the being that is the truth of the whole. Like the clay is the truth of the pot, right? Or the water is the truth of the ocean. This conscious being that I am is the truth of the whole. That's aparoksha jnanam. That means I know myself now. I've recognized it. myself is always there, fully experienced, but now I recognize the limitlessness of my being. That's aparoksha jnanam. Different from pratyaksha, from paroksha. Paroksha jnanam means, oh, they tell me there's a limitless self and I'm supposed to be that. That's indirect. Direct is, I am that. I recognize it. That knowledge, so that's the fifth one. That knowledge is shoka moksha. That's how he uses it. Shoka means sorrow. Moksha means liberation. Shoka moksha. Liberation from sorrow. That knowledge brings liberation from sorrow because it's not that sorrow isn't in the world. I mean, there's birth and death and tragedy and all kinds of things always going on in the world. But yourself is not changing. The sorrow is not in your being. The conscious being that you are never has sorrow. The mind can have sorrow, the body can have sorrow, the world can have sorrow. Consciousness has no sorrow. The being that you are illumines sorrow, and it illumines joy, and it illumines all states of experience, but the states of experience come and go. The conscious being is always the same. And the conscious being, I'm talking about you. So for instance, like when we were doing the meditation, when you're just sitting and being with the silent being that is yourself. And I used words like this very stable, very simple, silent self that you are. It's very beautiful, pure. Nothing can touch it. It can't become anything other than what it is. It's not going to become happy. It's not going to become sad. These words are inferior to what that is. Happy and sad are nothing compared to your essential nature. Say if you say all the happy experiences in the world, would you rather have those happy experiences in the world or your essential nature, just the simple being that you are? And there's no comparison. There's nothing more whole and solid and complete than your being. It's almost like saying, do you want to have the happy experiences or do you want to have yourself? You know? You want to be here. You want to be here to have the happy experiences. You're more important. Your being is more important than the happy experiences or the sad experiences. But the thing is now, this being, the stability of it has to be recognized. The changelessness of it, the wholeness of it. You know? And the only way to recognize, because it's already there completely, the only way to recognize it is to differentiate it. That stable self that is totally present to all of your experience. In meditation, one of the best ways, I mean, there's many ways of meditating, one of the very effective ways of being able to do that is like we were doing the meditation today, where you just totally relax your body and your mind and you accept what is there. You don't reject. It's not accept as like or dislike. It's the reality of what is there. You accept the reality of what is there. Whatever the feeling may be, maybe you have a hurt feeling or a good feeling or a positive feeling. Maybe your body is hurting or it's comfortable, whatever. Whatever the sounds are there, no rejection. You just simply allow that totally to be. So now your mind, if you allow it to be, your mind is disengaged. Once you totally accept something as it is, the mind is disengaged. You're just being. It's just being. When the mind is disengaged like that, it isn't preoccupied with running around trying to change and manipulate the situation or wish it away. When it's trying to manipulate the situation or wish it away or want it to be like this or want it to be like that, just on a mental level, the mind is engaged with all of that. So if you give it up for the moment, what happens is your own presence becomes predominant. You know, it's like if you have a clay pot, you imagine yourself as a clay pot kind of, the clay becomes predominant rather than the form. What the me, the changeless, simple presence of my own being becomes predominant because the mind's not engaged in trying to wish away or worry about or change the situation, or I should do that, or I should do that, or maybe I should do that. Just for the time being, you just let it go. And that gives you, it's like a timeout.
Mm-hmm.
It gives you a timeout just for your present, that's just the simple you to be. And let the mind then just bask in the beauty of that presence. And the mind gets kind of spoiled in a way, in a beautiful way, because it starts to recognize that stable, beautiful presence of myself is never not there. And so more and more it enjoys resting, enjoying that presence, and from that presence where the main attachment is, it experiences and lives in the world.
Mm.
Ishwara, it lives in the world which is the whole, which is Bhagavan. You know, so that becomes a very natural development when the mind is relaxed and has recognized the stability and changelessness of your own presence. That's the aparoksha jnanam, and that removes the shoka, it removes the sorrow, because there is no sorrow in the self to be had. You see what I mean? This is so important. You can think, oh, all the sorrow goes away from the mind, or the sorrow goes away from the world, or the sorrow goes away. That is probably true also, the sorrow goes away from the mind, but that isn't the point. The point is that yourself is free from sorrow. But that self is always the same. You could never say, I am sorrowful, because that isn't your nature. Well, your mind might have a reaction, but that reaction is taking place in you. Are you the reaction, or are you you? And what is your nature? Is it sorrowful? It is not. That's not the nature of the conscious being that you are. And that is where the ahankara for the jnani, the one who has self-knowledge, the ahankara, the I, rests in the self, not in the changing experiences. The I rests in the atma, in the self. And so with that, there's a release from sorrow, right? And on the positive end, there what he calls here, tripti nirankusha. Nirankusha means unfettered. Unfettered tripti. Tripti means satisfaction. Unfettered satisfaction. You have to be careful. Satisfaction is a nice word. It's an unfettered satisfaction that is not going to change, go anywhere, and nothing's going to happen with it. It's just satisfaction, period. It's not a state of satisfaction. It's a word that is used to label the nature of the silent presence that you are. That's why I say, you know, ask yourself, as you're sitting in meditation, you have your mind ask yourself, okay, what am I like, this silent being? If I were to say it's tripti, if it's satisfaction, it's at fullness, what do those words mean? What do the words mean in terms of your own self-experience? If I say satisfaction, then you say, well, why did they choose that word? You have to look at your own being, your silent, simple being, and say, oh, they're saying satisfaction for that. Well, that's right. You say, it is that way. You say, well, they say stable. Is it stable? It is stable because I could never change it, could never move it. It is stable. You see what I mean? You have to take these words, because it's not stable like a table. It's not satisfaction like, oh, I'm satisfied that I did this or that. It's not that. But these words are what we call lakshanas. They're words that, lakshanas mean that they're secondary. They're used as pointers, like this table is stable, this doesn't move. In that, kind of like that, yourself is stable. But you have to recognize the stability in yourself to know what it means. So the word's pointing. You have unfettered fullness or satisfaction. Those words that we know in relative reality are pointing. Right? So we have to see what those mean. So if you say that the self, the satisfaction of the self is unfettered, it means that this silent presence of you that is here right now, it is not sorrowful, it's not agitated, it's not waiting for something to happen, you know. It is already full and complete. And it has what we call this alam buddhi, all is well with me. Okay? So, these are the states. So let's do the next verse. Satta vasta imasanti, chirabhasasya pasvimau. Chirabhasasya tasvimau, pandamokshaustitau tatra, tisro bandha kritasmitaha. That says, Sandhi, satta avastaha imaha santi chid abhasasya Tasu imau. You see that? Tasu, that va is a new. Tasu imau. Bandha mokshau stitau tatra tisraha bandha kritaha smitaha. Okay, this is the septa. Septa means seven. Septa avastaha imaha. These seven stages, mean, it's just our avastamin states of experience, the ajnana, the avritti, the vikshepa, these seven that we've just gone through, the ignorance, the covering, the projection, etc. These seven states, they are santi, means they are, chit abhasa. Therefore the chit abhasa, they belong to the jiva. These seven states of experience, they belong to the jiva. I'll tell you what he's getting at in a minute. Tasu imau, among tasu, among them, two of them, imau, these two, bandha and moksha, these two, bandha, bondage and liberation, stitau, they are there, okay? So we've got these seven states, and among these seven states that belong to the jiva, they don't belong to Brahman, they don't belong to Atma, that's the idea. It's not that the Atma yourself has now, it's got some ignorance, and now it has a covering, and the self is now, you know, projecting, and is feeling sorrow, and samsara, and all of that. It's not the Atma. The Atma is fine. You know, it's like, if you say the sun is illumining the clouds. Right? The sun's not covered by the clouds. For the jiva underneath, looking up, they can't see the sun. There's a big rainstorm going on. And the jiva is, the individual is getting soaked. And they can't see the sun, but they can see the clouds that the sun is illuminating. Right? So you're looking up and getting soaked and experiencing the clouds. Uh-huh. Right? But from the standpoint of the sun has no problem. The sun is the sun. It's staying exactly the same. It's just as brilliant as it always has been. And it's illumining the rain. It's illumining the clouds. But it itself isn't becoming covered, or is it becoming stormy, or is it becoming cloudy. It just remains as the sun. So here, yourself is free. The Atma is free. It is always exactly the same. It's not becoming bound. It's not becoming liberated. It's not becoming, you know, free from sorrow. And it's not becoming satisfied. It already is that. The Atma is the Atma. It doesn't go through any modification. So all this bondage and liberation doesn't belong to the self. It belongs to the jiva, the body, mind, sense organs that are part of this creation. Right? The jiva is the one who's suffering here, not the Atma. The Atma is illuminating the suffering. Right? It's a big problem. Mm-hmm. So now here, so he says, these seven avastas, they belong to the chidabhasa, to the jiva. This transmigrating entity, body, mind, sense organs, complex. Among them, two, there's two things, bondage and liberation, right, of these seven. Then he says, there, in reference to the bondage and liberation, tisraha bandha kritaha smritaha. The first three, Right? The three are the cause for bondage. What three of all of these are the cause for bondage? Ajnanam, ignorance, avarana, the covering, and the projection, vikshepa. This is what causes the bondage. But jnanam, paroksha na paroksha jnanam, like this too, the knowledge, the paroksha na paroksha jnanam, and then the freedom from suffering, and the fullness, that's on the liberation side. Okay? So of these seven, the first three are the cause for bondage, of these seven stages, okay, that they're talking about. So he wants to talk about those now. So he says, Najana mityudasina, vyavaharasya karanam, vyavaharasya karanam, vichara prakabhavena, vichara prakabhavena, yuktamajnanamiritam, Sandhi. Na janami iti udasina vyavaharasya karanam vichara prak abhavena yuktam ajnanam iritam. He's now wanting to go into a little bit more detail about these seven. So he's starting the first, just defining the ajnanam. Najanami is just, I don't know. Janami, I don't know. Iti, thus. Udasina vyavaharasya karanam. The karanam, the cause, for this udasina vyavahara, very neutral behavior. Udasina means totally indifferent, neutral behavior. It's the, I don't know, it's like, I don't even know that I don't know. Like if you said, do you know this so-and-so and living in Russia? No. It means nothing to you. It doesn't make any difference at all. You don't even know that you don't know, and you don't know what it would even mean to know. Who cares? It's absolutely udasina. You're absolutely indifferent to it. That's 99.999% of the people in the world have this udasina vyavahara in reference to self-knowledge. The word self-knowledge doesn't ever come up in terms of bondage and liberation. Like if you were to say, do you know yourself? Do you know yourself? Do you know yourself? Yeah. What do you mean? What do you mean? Do I know myself? It's a kind of an odd question. Do I know my name? Do you know where I was born? You know, or do I understand my MO, how I operate? Right? So it's a question that is an improper question. Do you know yourself? You have to mean something by it. It could be some sort of psychological lingo. You see what I mean? So this udasina vyavahara, you just walk around not knowing yourself, not thinking about it. The ignorance is so much that you don't think about yourself being knowledgeable or ignorant in reference to yourself. You just take for granted your self-experience. You see what I mean? It's profound. You take for granted your experience here as an individual. I am here experiencing the world. I was born, my parents are such and such, I'm doing such and such. That's it. That's the udasina vyavahara. The I don't know isn't even a conscious I don't know. Okay. So that's the ajnanam. So it says, vichara prak abhava bhavena yuktam. This is something that's united with what we call vichara prakabhava. Prakabhava means, abhava means non-existence. Prakabhava means prior non-existence. They'll use it in this way, like it's a technical term that we use to kind of define non-existence. Say if I have we use it in reference to the clay pot. Say I have a thing of a ball of clay. and I make it into a pot. That pot has prior non-existence. It's called Prakabhava. Prak means before. So Prakabhava is non-existence prior. Prior non-existence. So until the pot is made, that pot is not existent. So that's Prakabhava. Once, if I squash the, I've made the pot, if I then break the pot, then it has what we call Pradvamsa Abhava, posterior non-existence. Right? So now he's using this technical term in reference to vichara. This ajnanam, this profound ajnanam where I don't even think about it, is something which occurs prior, it's prior to any vichara. Right? If there's an absolute, it's prior, there's an absolute absence, a prakabhava, of vichara. Vichara means any type of questioning or analysis. It's not there. So this type of I don't know anything, this indifferent behavior, is yuktam. It's united with this absolute absence of vichara.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Why they say this is because after vichara, you know, there's also a kind of an indifferent behavior. You don't want to know because you already know. Right? After vichara, after you have knowledge, you're not seeking to gain knowledge. You don't care about it at all. But now you have knowledge, and that's why you don't care about it. Before, the ignorance is so dark. When the ignorance is so dark, you don't care about it because it hasn't occurred to you to care about it. So that level of deep, dark ignorance that takes place before vichara, you know, that brings about this absolute indifferent behavior, he says, that is called ajnanam. Everybody see what that is? We're all, you know, born out of that. By the very fact that you're a jiva, that ajnanam is there. Okay? So then he says, let's do the next one for Vikshepa. Amaragena vicharayata. Amaragena vicharayata. Nasti no pati chetyasau. Nasti no pati chetyasau. Viparita vyavahritihi. Viparita vyavahritihi. Avritek karyam ishyate. Avritek karyam ishyate. Amargena vicharya atha na asti naha bhati cha iti asau. Cha iti asau. Viparita vyavahritihi avritehe karyam ishyate. He says, now, this darkness, ignorance, thorough ignorance is there. That being there, then what's the next thing? Amargena vicharya atha. Then after that. Having inquired, indeclinable past participle, vicharya, having inquired amargena incorrectly. Marga means path. Amarga means the wrong path. You know, you've been thinking about this, but you're on the wrong track. You're going in the wrong way. Marga means path. Amarga negates it, you know. You're off the track. You know, you're off track. So, amargena vicharyata. And what is that? A conclusion is reached from that. Na asti naha bhati cha iti asau. Off track now because of that what we're going to say is the avritti. You can say, if you're inquiring into it, there is no self, na asti. There is no self there, na bhati. You know, this atma means this kutasta atma, this limitless atma. Na asti, there's no such thing, na bhati. That's not something that I've ever experienced, such a thing. Na bhati means I've never seen such a thing, never heard about such a thing, never experienced it. It's not there. So that such a thing is viparita vyavahritihi, the saying of something. This vyavahritihi means You're saying this and you're acting, you're behaving as though this is true. The viparita means opposite. Your behavior is the opposite to what is true. You know, what you say is the opposite of what is true, because you're saying that kutastha atma or that Brahman or whatever you're talking about, I've never seen such a thing. I don't think such a thing is there. That's the avritti. So he says, avritte he karyam ishyate. That said, being able to say that, that is caused by, it's an effect of avritti. Right? That covering that allows you to say, there is no limitless atma. I'm not a limitless atma. I'm not stable. I'm changing all the time. What are you talking? That's the covering, because I can't find that in myself. That's how deep the covering is. That's the covering aspect of the ajnanam. So that's avritti. Then the vikshepa, he goes, deha dvaya chira bhasa, deha dvaya chira bhasa, rupo vikshepa iritaha, rupo vikshepa iritaha, kartrutvajya kila shokaha, kartrutvajya kila shokaha, samsarakyasya bhandakaha, samsarakyasya bhandakaha, deha dvaya chid abhasa rupaha, vikshepaha iritaha, kartrutva adi akilaha shokaha, samsara akyaha, asya bandakaha. He says, the deha dvaya, the two bodies, the subtle body and the physical body that I have as a jiva, the chirabhasa, the reflection of consciousness together with the physical body and the subtle body, rupaha. So the vikshepa is in the form of, this subtle body, and I'll get into, have to explain how this is, but the subtle body, the vikshepa, the projection is in the form of the subtle body, the reflection of consciousness which has the subtle body and the physical body. Deha dvaya, the two bodies, chirabhasa, the reflection of consciousness. So the vikshepa is this reflection of consciousness and the deha and the two bodies. Now that being so, kartritva adi akilaha shokaha. Sorrow, akila shoka, all sorrow, beginning with kartritvam, beginning with doership, kartritva adi, akilaha shokaha, all sorrow, beginning with doership, samsarakyaha, that we call samsara, all of the sorrow that we label as we call it samsara, all of the samsara, bandakaha asya, is the cause of bondage for him, is what binds him. Okay? I'm going to just unfold this verse, and then the next two verses we'll have to spend next class on it. Okay? But let me make this where he's going. Vidyarani does this slightly differently, but it's very nice also. There's two levels where we can look at this vikshepa. One level is here, as now this jiva is here, right? This physical body is here with mind and sense organs, plus the ajnanam. And now with that ajnanam, I am creating, right? I'm creating my problems. Like if I say, I am limited, or I am going to die, or my happiness is out here, right? Mm-hmm. My happiness is out here and things aren't going well, so I'm not going to be able to get it. I create tension. And it's all based upon ajnanam. So I'm manifesting all of these problems based upon my ignorance. It doesn't have any reality. in truth. But, you know, if I see a snake instead of a rope, I'm reacting to snake, not the rope. There is no snake there. Like that, I create a huge web of problems for myself based upon my ignorance. And the emotions I'm experiencing are based upon this web of projection that I put out there. So often we're using vikshepa in that way. Okay? When we think of, so now, there's something else here. When we think of Ishwara, the Lord, in terms of this creation, okay, the whole creation comes from the self, from Brahman, from the conscious being. The entire creation comes from consciousness, is sustained by consciousness, goes back into consciousness. That Maya is what's responsible for the projection. If I am Ishwara, means then the whole projection, right, comes from me, and I'm not identified with any given part of it. Right? And so for me, there is no ignorance. There's this magnificent, infinite projection, right? But I have no ignorance because I'm not identified with anything. It's just a projection. It's a limitless projection. It's a limitless Maya Upadi that we call the infinite creation, right? And all of that is enjoying myself. I am the self of that whole. And it is infinite. I'm not identified with any given part. And so for me, there is no limitation. It's just an expression. The creation is an expression of limitless knowledge from the standpoint of Ishwara. By that, remember I've used the example for if you use your own mind to try to understand what this is. If I ask you to imagine a meadow, then when that imagination comes, before the imagination came, it's in unmanifest condition. I ask you to imagine a meadow, you bring it into imagination, you see that that's what's there. That's manifest knowledge. Okay? And so now in this manifest knowledge of the meadow, you can have so much activity going on. There can be people in the meadow, there can be relationships with those people. You can see how real it can get if you're having a dream or a lucid dream. There's all kinds of activity going on in the meadow. Maybe there can be animals and people and all. It can be, you know, you can be camping. There could be all kinds of a whole world going on in the meadow. Right? For the people in the meadow, there is ajnanam, because from the individuals within the meadow, including the animals and the birds and the trees, the consciousness that is being enjoyed, which is the truth of that manifestation, is not enjoyed for what it is, as being limitless, but it's only enjoyed from the standpoint of the upadi. Upadi means the conditioning agent. Like the creature, the person in that meadow imagination is looking out at the meadow through the sense organs and has no means of knowledge to recognize that I am just part of a manifestation of infinite consciousness. I am one part of an infinite whole. At that, from the standpoint of that limited being, there is avarna and vikshepa. There's avarna. There's a covering of the truth of who I am, because actually every part of that meadow is not away from the conscious me. That is the one from whom the meadow projected. I am the self of the whole meadow. That's the truth of it in every part of it. The characters in the meadow don't know that because they are subject to avarna. They're subject to ajnanam, that covering that then covers the truth of the situation and then allows the projection where now this character is going to say, I am limited and I am subject to death. Right? That's what that character enjoys. But now from Ishwara's standpoint, the Maya that projects, there is no ajnanam, right? There's no avarna. The ajnanam is Maya. For Ishwara, what is ajnanam for the jiva is Maya for Ishwara. So for Ishwara, the Maya projects, that's the vikshepa. The projection is the vikshepa. Now if I ask for you, say I'll make you into an Ishwara, I ask you to project a meadow with creatures in it. Right? You are using your maya to project, right, the meadow with all the creatures. So for you, there's only the maya upadi and the vikshepa that projects it. For everyone in the projection, that maya, what is the maya upadi for Ishvara, right, is avarna, is ajnanam, right? Because the maya upadi itself covers the truth. And so there's ignorance which is covering the maya. What is maya for Ishvara is ignorance for all of the jivas, right? Because it's acting as a covering, which then causes the ignorance. I mean, it would then causes the mistaken projection. Okay, so now, this is the important part that we're going to have to spend another class on. The jiva that is projected as the body, the mind, the body and the subtle body, the physical body, the mind, the sense organs, and all of that, right? That projection is never away from ajnanam for the jiva, right? So the jiva, but from Ishvara's standpoint, the whole body, mind, sense organs is a projection. Right? The body, mind, sense organs, it's a name and form. It's a vikshepa. But from Ishvara's standpoint, that vikshepa has no ajnanam. There's just the maya upadi. But from the jiva's standpoint, that vikshepa, which is now you, your body, mind, sense organs, has ajnanam, right? And its cause, that what causes that jiva to be, so that this jiva here, this body, mind, sense organs that says, I am a limited being, which really is the vikshepa, that is caused by beginningless ignorance. And so he's going to get into a long discussion about this, because the vikshepa is suffering from the ignorance. The vikshepa suffers from the ignorance. But the ignorance should be there. Anyway, we have to get into it. It's a complex discussion, but it's very, very interesting. So, but for now, let's go back to this verse so I won't leave you in a mess. Okay? Because maybe this will make it a little clearer. Look at how the vikshepa is being defined, the projection is being defined in this verse. Deha dvaya chira basa rupa. The vikshepa is being defined as you. You mean your body, your mind, your sense organs, right? It's this person that's sitting here. You are the vikshepa. Right? And it's true. You are projected, right? Your Ishvara's vikshepa. You are projected. But this projection that you are is suffering from ajnanam. Right? Ishvara is not suffering from ajnanam, from ignorance. You're suffering from ajnanam because you're part of projection. So that's why sometimes it's helpful to use this image of projecting a meadow. You project the meadow, you project everybody in it. You're not suffering from the vikshepa. Everything there is projected. So you're projected, you're projected, you're projected. And you're suffering from the projection. Ishvara is not suffering from the projection because it's the whole. The fact is that you are Ishvara. In truth, you are the self from whom the projection came. Like, what is the truth? If you have a meadow that you've just projected, every part of that meadow has for its truth the conscious being that projected the meadow. And every creature in the meadow is saying, I am, I am, I am, I am. What is the I am being that they're referring to? Is the self, which is the very substance of the entire projection. As Ishvara, you know that. You are that. You are that whole. There's no problem. But for everybody in there, in the projection, they're all going, I am subject to birth and death. You know, I am different from you. And so all of these jivas, all of these vikshepas, you know, need now to have the ajnanam removed. And so then what happens, as long as they have a body, they're still walking around within the creation, but they know I'm the whole. Because you are the whole. In what form? The conscious being that you are is the truth of the whole projection. And that whole projection comes from you, the conscious being. Now, this has to become aparoksha. You have to directly recognize it. That's why in the meditation, in what we were talking, if you have this room, you think of this room, you see everything that's external to your sense organs are in this room, but this body and your mind and your sense organs are also in the room. They're also known. Just like I see all of you and you see me, I have to put this body in the room also, so that I can recognize that there is nothing here at all that's away from my being. My being is here, my being is here, my being is there. There's nothing separate from me. It's only this Dehatma Buddhi, this total identification with the body. And you can appreciate the dilemma. That's why I like the meadow example. Put yourself in the situation of a character in the meadow that you've imagined, with their sense organs and their mind and their body looking around in that meadow, trying to figure out what the heck's going on. Who am I? This little character is saying, who am I? It's become a mumukshu. Who am I? What am I doing here? What is my relationship to the meadow? Is there anything about me that survives death? What is the truth? I want to know the truth. But that little character in the meadow doesn't have the means of knowledge available to know that this conscious being, when the little character is saying, I am, I exist, I am a conscious being, that they does not have a means of knowledge for that one to differentiate the consciousness, the conscious me, from this mind-body-sense complex, the vikshepa, that is saying, I am a conscious being. This mind is saying, I am a conscious being. It is referring to me, the conscious being. But the me, the conscious being that it's referring to, is the me from whom the whole meadow has come. You see that? The whole, everything there enjoys only myself. It comes from me, is sustained by me, resolves into me. I have to recognize that in reference to my experience here. As a jiva, from this standpoint, just like the jiva in the meadow, that jiva in the meadow can't have the whole vision of the creation. Right? Because it's a part to the whole. But you can be a part to the whole. You can have that direct, immediate recognition that whatever is in your sphere of experience is nothing but you. And you can infinitely extend that. Because there's nothing away from your being unless you're identified here. See what I mean? But if everything is in consciousness, this is in consciousness, this body is in consciousness, my sense organs are in consciousness, my thoughts are in consciousness, the I thought is in consciousness, everything is known. The consciousness is just simply abiding. Right? It's abiding there as the very being of all my experience. So that's why this differentiation has to be so thorough, so that I can actually see that aparoksha jnanam is there. So let's stop here, because this is going to go into a big discussion now. Let's take a minute. Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Harihi Om Shri Gurupyo Namaha. Harihi Om.